Okay, so today we're on Daf Kufyud Aleph. This is our last daf with Refuot, but it gets a little bit to more substantive areas in Halacha tonight. So I'll begin with the Mishnah on Kufyud Aleph and Aleph, around 10 lines down, 111a, around 10 lines down. So the Mishnah says, Choshesh b'shinav lo yigameh b'henet achometz. If a person has a toothache on Shabbat, he should not sip vinegar. The Gemara takes that vinegar is the refuah for the toothache. And again, when we speak about a toothache, we're talking about like a mild toothache, not like, you know, like people have root canal, you know, dying from the pain. That's not what we're talking about. He has a mechush ba'alma where the prohibition of refuah would be in place. So lo yigameh b'henet achometz, he shouldn't sip vinegar. Now, the Gemara is going to eventually explain that the pshat in the Mishnah is he shouldn't sip it if he's going to spit it out. In other words, if he just takes the vinegar and spits it out, then it's apparent to everyone that he's taking it for refuah. Because if he's eating it, it would be for eating, he'd consume it. So he's spitting it out. He says here, aval mitabel hu kidarko. What he could do, he could dip it in the normal fashion, in other words, for food. That's the way people normally do it with food. And then if he has refu as a result of that, then he's certainly fine. He's certainly fine. Now, Tosfos is going to say, he's telling me the most normal case where a person would use vinegar would be dipping the vinegar. But in Achinami, if he swallows it, he's okay. So now the Gemara says, Achoshe b'manav lo yasuch, and the bach is behen. If a person, he's got some sort of pain in his loins, I don't know exactly what the problem is, but he's got pain in his loins, lo yasuch behen yayin v'chometz, he shouldn't smear them with wine or vinegar. In other words, again, like healthy people don't do this. So if you're smearing wine or vinegar, it's like muchach that you're doing it for refuah. You're not allowed to take refuah on Shabbos. He says, aval sach with a shemen, but a person could smear oil because healthy people smear oil. So he could smear oil, below shemen verid, but he shouldn't take shemen verid. Shemen verid is rose oil. So he quoted here in the Art Scroll, it means that you boiled. He quotes from the Chidush Eran that he had oil in which the roses have been boiled for many days in the sun. That's footnote 23. So that shemen is very expensive. So let's see back in the Gemara. He says velo shemen vered. He shouldn't do shemen vered. If you look at Rashi, avalo shemen vered lefisha demav yikarin. It's very expensive. Einu matsui. It's not, you know, readily available. Umucha milta de refua avid. Anybody who would take the shemen verid and anoint it on his loins, that's clear that he's doing it for refua purposes. He says, b'nei melachim sachin shemen verid al makotein. But the Tanakhama says that b'nei melachim, princes, aristocracy, you know, presumably people with wealth, could do the shemen verid on their maka, on their wound on Shabbos. Shekin dark on the sofa chol. They do that during the week. In other words, they have tons of money. So they use the shemen verid even when they're healthy. So they could use the shemen verid even on Shabbos, and it's not apparent to anybody who views it that they're doing it for refuah purposes. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kol Yisrael b'nei melachim. The Tana Rabbi Shimon says that all of Klal Yisrael are viewed as b'nei melachim, and b'meila all of Klal Yisrael are entitled to use it. You can't have, the way Rav Shimon will say, you can't have part of the population that gets to use it and part of the population can't use it. Either we're all using it or we're not all using it. So we're entitled to view all Klal Yisrael as B'nai Malachim, and you know, it appears elsewhere in the Mishnah, right? Who remembers another Mishnah where it says B'nai Malachim mentions, who remembers? So the Mishnah Masechet Brachot, I think on Daf Tet, where it gives the time for a Kriyat Shema. So Reb Lezer says Ben Techet Lecharti, and anyway, but Rabbi Yeshua says Ad Shloshot. The Tana Rabbi Yeshua says you could recite Shema till 3 hours in the day. Shekein Derech B'nei Melachim Lamod B'Shloshot, because B'nei Melachim get up in 3 hours of the day, and Mamela Kol Yisrael, everybody Jew is entitled to be viewed as a Ben Melech. Anyway, so the basic idea in the Mishnah is the idea we've had before that, again, we have three types of sick people for halachic purposes for Shabbos. We have people who are suffering from a mechush ba'alma, like a minor ailment. A minor ailment would be like a minor headache, a minor toothache, you know, nothing serious. Those people are under a prohibition from taking refu on Shabbos. Then you have cholosha ein bo sakana. A person is so sick, he's got a temperature, he's confined to bed, or he's got a sakana d'aver, he's concerned about one aver, one limb, but he's not concerned about his whole body, or his kol chalalo, like he's got an internal wound that he's like very ill. So in those cases, he does have a prohibition against using medicine, and certainly pikuach nefesh also. So for focusing on the first group where I have the prohibition against taking medicine, using medicine on Shabbos, so if I'm doing something that healthy people do, so then I'm allowed to do it because it's like, it's not muchach, it's not apparent that I'm taking it for medicinal purposes. And then obviously it's something like a food or something like that, something that a healthy person would do. But if it's something that a healthy person would never do, then I have a problem. Okay, who's got questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did on the Mishnah?
It seems the vitamins are okay, right?
I don't know about that.
Healthy people take it.
Yeah, it's true. I have to look into it. I need to look into it, okay? All right, now what did you want to say, Aaron Moshe?
I just wanted to say it seems that machshava, your intention is not as important as what it looks like to be.
Right, that's true. That's true. Okay, you got it right. Okay, let's go back. Okay, don't forget to mute yourself. Okay, let me help you. Okay, now, let's do the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Rami le Rav Acha Richa, who Rav Acha bar Papa, Rabbi Abahu. So Rav Acha Aricha, who is Rav Acha bar Papa, it's the same person. He posed the following contradiction to Rabbi Abahu. Rabbi Abahu was in Eretz Israel. He says, Tanan, we learn in our Mishnah, which we just learned, Hachoshesh b'shinav lo yigamei b'hen anachometz. If a person has a toothache, he should not on Shabbos sip vinegar, because the vinegar would be refuah. And we explained already, I based on the maskan of the Gemara, it's going to mean that you're spitting out the vinegar, but you shouldn't take the vinegar. So the Gemara says, Lameimra, the chometz mal, and the shinaim. So the implication of the Mishnah is that vinegar is very helpful for the teeth. That's the underlying premise of the Mishnah. Vinegar is a good thing for teeth. He says, Vahakti, but there's a pasuk in Mishnah in the book of Proverbs. He says, Kichomis l'shinayim l'chashan l'einayim. Now, the Gemara, again, here, as in many other places, only quotes the beginning of the pasuk. It helps if you have the whole pasuk. It says that, like vinegar is to teeth and smoke is to the eyes. That's the way an atzel, like a lazy person, is to the person who sends it. Whereas it's like you don't want to know from this fellow. It's like I got a headache from him. So the implication of the pasuk is, in other words, you don't want smoke in the eyes, and you don't want chometz in the shinayim. So the implication of the pasuk is chometz is not good for the teeth. So the implication of our Mishnah is it's good for the teeth, and therefore you can't take it on Shabbos. But from the pasuk says it's like bad news for the teeth. So the Gemara says, "Lo kasha." There's no contradiction between our Mishnah and that pasuk. Habakiyu de pere habachala. I could say the pasuk is on kiyu de pere. It means the pasuk is not actually talking about vinegar per se. It's talking about unripe grapes or fruit. They have a very acrid taste. In other words, the juice has very acrid taste. So that's what the pasuk is talking about. He says habachala, whereas our Mishnah is talking about bona fide vinegar. That's one way to say it. In other words, it's a very sharp taste, the juice from the unripe fruit, which the pasuk refers to as chometz, but it's not technically chometz. He says here v'ibay neima, or else I could say a different answer. Haba habachala. They're both talking about vinegar. He says, had the ikamaka, had lekamaka. But our Mishnah is talking about where the person already has a wound, he's got a problem, then the vinegar is helpful. The pasuk is talking about you're healthy, and then if you take the vinegar, then it won't be good. He says, ikamakamase. If you have a wound, the vinegar will be helpful. He says, lekamaka marape. If you don't have a wound, it's just going to loosen the teeth. So I don't know all the details, medically speaking, how this would work. But it's a little similar to something that I read once about Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. You know, there was a big controversy in the 19th century. Rabbi Shlomo Salanter was the leader of the Musar movement. I'm sure you've all heard this. So he was like redirecting. They had Musar yeshivas. He was redirecting the focus from studying Gemara to building up people's midot and acting in certain ways to build the midah. Like, for example, like they would have, like a Talmud would get on a train without enough money so that he'd feel the embarrassment of being thrown off the train. In other words, like to develop midot, you do different things. And they had a lot of different things like this. So it really caused a big controversy in the Olam HaTorah at that time in the 19th century. So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said he thought So that each side adduced proofs to their side of the whole issue. But Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said he thought Musar, so they, in other words, the proponent said he should have a study of Musar. They wanted really, in the Musar yeshiva was like a big part of the day was just studying Musar. And so Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said he thought it was like that Musar was like castor oil. Now, I don't know about, we don't have any doctors here tonight, but he said if you're sick, the castor oil helps you. But if you're healthy, the castor oil is not good for you. So he, Reb Chaim, felt that people who are studying, they're in good shape. They don't need the Musar. It's not helpful to them that way. And but it's similar here. They're saying like the vinegar, if you're sick, the vinegar, they have a bad tooth, the vinegar will help you. If you don't have a bad tooth, it's gonna mess you up. But that's the way I was thinking about it. Okay, any questions, comments, or thoughts on anything I said so far? Okay, I'm going to move on. All right, let's take a look. So... All right, so we're around 20 lines from the bottom on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, 111A, around 20 lines from the bottom. Welcome, Robert. We're on 111A, Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, okay? So we're speaking about you're not allowed to take refuah on Shabbat if it's just a mechush balm, if it's a minor ailment. So we're talking about if a person has a toothache. So the Mishnah says he shouldn't take vinegar, you know, and it's going to be take it and spit it out is the way it's going to come out. So and the Brice that we learn, a person shouldn't sip it and spit it out, but a person could sip it and swallow it. So the Brice is saying, and this is going to be the maskana of the Gemara, that if I sip the vinegar and swallow the vinegar, that's fine, because then it looks like I'm just like consuming vinegar. But if I sip it and then I spit it out, then it's apparent to everybody I'm taking it for medicinal purposes. So that's prohibited. So the Gemara, that's what the Brisa says. So the question is, but our Mishnah says, just 1 minute, wait 5 minutes, okay? So the question is, how come our Mishnah says you shouldn't sip it, and Brisa says you shouldn't sip it and spit it out, but you could sip it and swallow it? So Amar Abaye, ki tanan nami manitin, megameo pole tanan. When our Mishnah says that you shouldn't sip it, it means you shouldn't sip it and spit it out. And okay, 1 minute, he says, now, Tosos points out, if you look at Tosos 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth Tosos on the left-hand column, Tosos says, Kitanan namanitin be megameu poletanan, besefet tani abol metabol hu kedarko. So the question is, why does the Mishnah say that you could dip it, in other words, dip it in food or whatever, that's the way they would eat their food, they would dip bread in vinegar and things like that. Why does Tana say that? Why doesn't the Tana just say that you could just swallow it? So he says, the Tana could have said that, you swallow it. He says, he's just telling you, this is the most common way to use vinegar, or to consume the vinegar that way. But in Akinami, if you want to take the vinegar straight and swallow it, that's also fine. Okay, that's the first shot from Abaye. What's up, Fern? Let me hear.
Is the issue with the refuah that it's apparent to everyone else that you're taking refuah? This is the second time you said that.
Right.
So then when you have the case with the loins, I would think that that would be done in privacy. So yeah, why do the same concepts
it means
apply?
That people, it means that people know you're doing it, they'll learn you're doing it, things like that. That's what it means.
I would think that would be difficult to learn.
Nah, you hear, Joe had a headache with his loins, so he smeared the loins with wine today and he felt better. Anyway, he comes to shul, he says, I had such a pain this morning, but I smeared wine on it and I did okay. All right, anyway, that's the way it's going. Okay.
All right, I have a question. If the concern is in refuah on Shabbos is that you're somehow going to do malacha, like by grinding stuff or some kind of work to make a medicine, for all of the other medicinal things that we've been studying, obviously none of those would require engaging in that malacha. Why can't you make a distinction between one and the other?
Okay, so when there's a cloud the Gemara has that the poskim have is low plug. When the chami make a rule, they make a blanket rule. Even though you're right, like with the wine, it's not shayach, you know, shchichat samamanim, grinding the compounding the medicine. But there's a general rule across the board. You can't take medicine on Shabbos, regardless, even if this specific medicine, you don't need to do that with, okay? All right, let me just get to the end of the sugya, then I'll take some more questions, okay? All right, let's go back in the Gemara. Okay, now, the Gemara says, We're around 10 lines from the bottom on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Okay, 111a, 10 lines from the bottom. Now, Rava Amar, Rava's going to give a different answer, and then the Gemara is going to reject Rava's answer and go back to Abaye's answer, which is why I focused on Abaye's answer, okay? So, again, we're explaining the stira between, the contradiction between our Mishnah and the Braisa. Our Mishnah says that a person should not sip vinegar, and the Braisa says that a person shouldn't sip and spit it out, but if he wants to swallow it, he could. So Rava Amar, Afilutim Megamea Ubolea, Rava says you could say that both our Mishnah and the Braisa are talking about swallowing the vinegar. So in other words, according to Rava, our Mishnah is saying that a person cannot take vinegar and swallow it, and the Braisa is saying the person could take vinegar and swallow it. So that's the way he understands it. He says, Kan lefnei tibul, kan la'achar tibul. But the reason for the difference is that the Braisa is talking about before, tibul means to dip, but it means before the meal. So that if a person takes vinegar before the meal, that like, it's like, you know, plausible that he's just, you know, doing it for consumption of food, because that's the way they would eat. They would dip everything in the vinegar, you have the vinegar, it's like you're having like a vorspeise. A vorspeise is an appetizer. So that's the way. But our Mishnah that says you should not, you know, take the vinegar and swallow it, it's talking about after the meal. After the meal, nobody would take vinegar. That was the way that they would have their meals. So that's what Rava wants to say. So the Gemara says, "Venema midlefnei tibul shari laachar tibul nami shari." So the Gemara says, "Does that make sense? Does that line of argument make sense? Meaning, we should. Is there such an idea that something is prohibited at one point in Shabbos and permissible at another point in Shabbos?" According to Rava, the way this Hesber is going, so that it would be permissible for a person to take vinegar before a meal, but not take vinegar after a meal. That's the way it's coming out. So the Gemara says, does that make sense that you'd have something that's permissible at one point in Shabbos and prohibited at another point in Shabbos? He says, "Dishamini le Rava deidle hoil." We see that Rava adopts the idea of hoil. We're going to see hoil in a second. And I think I'm going to say this outside first, then we'll do it inside. Okay, so the idea of hoil is the Gemara learns in Masechet Be'ah, which Masechet Be'ah is also called Masechet Yantiv because it deals with the halakhos of Yantiv, that a person is not allowed to immerse a keli in a mikvah on Shabbos or Yontif. In other words, let's say I need my kalim need to be toveled in the mikvah. So I'm not allowed to tovel. In other words, let's say a person has some silverware and they didn't, you know, immerse in the mikvah. I'm not allowed to immerse in the mikvah on Shabbos or Yontif because it's near it kimitakin kli. It looks like I'm mitakin, fixing a kli. I'm not physically fixing the kli, but I'm spiritually fixing the kli. Before I couldn't use the kli, now I could use the kli. So I'm mitaking the kli. So that's on a rabbinic level, I'm not allowed to be tovel kalim on Shabbos. That's the first yisod. So then the Gemara says, what about a person? A person, so the Gemara learns that a person could be tovel in a mikvah on Shabbos or Yontiv. So the Gemara says, but isn't it near like he's mitaking himself? The, you know, before the person had tuma, now not. So the Gemara says it's near a kamekir. It would appear that the person's just trying to cool off, and cooling off would be a permissible use of the mikvah. So then the Gemara says, well, what about on Yom Kippur? Let's say a woman or whatever needs to be tovel on Yom Kippur, and we don't hold this lahalacha. So the Gemara says that since, in other words, on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to have relations with your, you know, your husband or anything like that. So see, I didn't say right. In other words, on Yom Kippur, scratch that. On Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to be maker. You can't chill yourself off in a pool on Yom Kippur. That's one of the inuyim is rechitza. So I'm not allowed to do that. So now it looks like, why should it be permissible on Yom Kippur? It should be near a kimitakin. Like, it looks like the person is, you know, fixing themselves. So the Gemara says, from the fact that it's, in other words, the halakhot of Shabbos and Yom Kippur, it can't be Yom Kippur is more chamor than Shabbos. It can't be the dinim of Yom Kippur more chamor than Shabbos. And since on Shabbos it's permissible, on Yom Kippur it's also permissible. So I want you to think of Shabbos and Yom Kippur as like a continuum of a period of time. And since in one period of time is permissible, the other equivalent period of time is also permissible. So Rava is a proponent of that svar. That's Hoyel. Since in this period of time is permissible, since in period of time A it's permissible to go in the mikvah, in period of time B it's also permissible. So the Gemara wants to say, how could it be that Rava would say that you're allowed to swallow the vinegar before the meal, but you cannot allow to swallow the vinegar after the meal because it's making like one part of Shabbos different than another part of Shabbos. But Rava holds from the idea of Hoyle, and it was Hoyle since we'll see it inside a minute. Let me just do it inside and then we'll pause, okay? So let's see back in the Gemara. So he says, okay, this is 10 lines from the bottom. Why don't we say that since it's permissible to have the vinegar, to consume the vinegar before the meal, so after the meal is also permissible, the Shaminin the Rava, because we know that Rava holds the Itle Hoil, he holds from Hoil, Dama Rava, Lekamidi the Shabbat Shari, Uviyoma Kippur Masur. There's nothing that on Shabbos that's permissible. You can't have something that Shabbos is more chamor than Yom Kippur. Shabbos, the simple test is the number of leaves. The Gemara Megillah learns, is more kadosh. So seven leaves on Shabbos, six leaves on Yom Kippur. Shabbos, b'mezid, and edim, hasra, you get skila. You know, Yom Kippur, b'mezid, and mostly you get karet. And so Yom Kippur is less chamor than Shabbos, clearly. So the Gemara says, there's nothing that on Shabbos you're permitted to do, and on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to do that. He says, Hoil de B'Shabbat Shari, so here's the Hoil. So since on Shabbos, he's allowed to do it, so he says, V'Yom Kippur Imnami Shari, so on Yom Kippur, he's also permitted to do it. So we want to carry out or extend that Svara to Shabbos itself, Gufa. Hoil, since, you know, before the meal it's permitted to have the vinegar, so after the meal it should be permitted to have the vinegar. How can Rava propose this teirus? It runs contradictory to as far that he has elsewhere. So the Gemara says, Hada be Rava mihach. Rava retracted his opinion, not from Hoyil, but he retracted his opinion, his explanation of the contradiction between our Mishnah and the Brisa about having the vinegar before the meal and having the vinegar after the meal. So he retracted it, and then he went like Abaye's Hesber. Let's see Rashi on this for a second. The first very wide line downstairs. Haki Garcina Hadar be Rabba Meha, the Kodam Tibul, Umuki Manitin Bemagea Upolate Kabaye, Zunem Ratchila Bahadarbe. So first he made the statement, first about Rabba suggested a possible reconciliation between our Mishnah and the Brisa, you know, having the vinegar, that our Mishnah is talking about having the vinegar after the meal. The Brisa is talking about having the vinegar. In other words, they're both talking about swallowing the vinegar, not spitting it out. And our Mishnah is talking about having the vinegar after the meal, so this nira, it's open and notorious. It looks like it's the refuah, and then Bryce is talking about having it before the meal. So the Gemara says, but Rava he holds from the svar of Hoyil. I can't have like equivalent periods of time where something's permissible on one area and prohibit another area. So how could Rava say that it's permissible, that the same act is permissible, you know, some hours on Shabbos and prohibit other hours of Shabbos? The Gemara says Rava retracted that explanation of our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, how did you figure out? You're right, both svaras contradict one another. He can't hold from both. How did you figure out he retracted the Hesber of the Mishnah and the Brisa? Maybe he retracted the whole idea of Hoyil. Maybe he holds that now people can't be Tovel on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, Lo sakadaitach, I wouldn't think such a thing. Titania, because we learn in the Brisa, kol chayvei tvilot, anyone who's obligated to go to the mikvah. Now the chayvei tvilot here, one second, he means like the woman's anita or she gave birth, those would be chayvei tvilot. He says, tovlin kedarkan beim tishba beim yom kippurim. They're allowed to immerse themselves in the mikvah on tishba ben yom kippur. So the only way to explain that Brisa is using the svar of Hoyil, which is what Rava had advanced. So we don't think that Rava withdrew from the concept of Hoyil. He holds the idea from the idea of Hoyil. He retracted his explanation of our Mishnah. Okay, let me just summarize a little bit, then we'll take some questions, comments, and thoughts. Now, I just want to emphasize, again, we don't hold from this Brisa, so we don't hold that people go to the mikvah on Tisha B'Av. We don't hold that people go to the mikvah on Yom Kippur. Okay, now, so just to summarize again, so we had a stira between our Mishnah and the Brisa. We thought our Mishnah says that a person with a toothache is not allowed to sip vinegar on Shabbos to cure it, and the Brisa says he just can't sip it and spit it out, but he could sip it and swallow it. So Rava said, so we had two explanations to reconcile the Mishnah and the Brisa. So Abaye's Hesber, which the Gemara ends up in the Maskana, is that everybody agrees you can't take it and spit it out. Then it's Mucha Milta that you're doing it for Refua. But if you take it and you swallow it, Shoin, that's fine. That's the way Abaye reconciles it. Then Rava advanced a different explanation. Rava advanced the explanation that the Mishnah is talking about after the meal on Shabbos. Nobody takes vinegar after a meal on Shabbos, then it's Muchamilta. Whereas the Brisa, they're both talking about not spitting it out. They're both talking about, you know, sipping it and swallowing it. And the Brisa is talking about sipping it and swallowing it before the meal. Then people do it. And then the Gemara says, no, Rava can't hold from such a idea. He wouldn't say that the same action is permissible in one part of Shabbos and prohibited the other part of Shabbos, and that's the way we're going with that. Okay, who's got questions, comments, and thoughts on anything we did so far?
I got a question.
What's up?
But there are other things that usher on Shabbat, usher on Yom Kippur, but not on Shabbat, like eating.
Yeah. Okay. He means you have to be mechalik the different dinim. He means that, again, Yom Kippur is called Shabbat Shabbaton. It's right. like a super Shabbos. Then there are other dinim that relate to the inuyim of Yom Kippur. But in terms of the dinim of Shabbos, the lamed lachod, and all those are the same. Obviously, Yom Kippur has all other prohibitions in place. Otherwise, we wouldn't call it Yom Kippur. We call it Shabbos. Okay. All right. Any other questions, comments, or thoughts? Okay, we're going to move on. All right, we're closing in on the end of this parak. Nice to see everybody here. Okay, let's take a look again. We're five lines from the bottom on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Hachoshesh b'matna v'chulei. So we said if a person has pain in his loins, so he shouldn't smear wine or vinegar on it because that's clearly notoriously and apparent that he's using it for refuah purposes. But he could put oil on it, because healthy people put oil on it, but he shouldn't use shemen verit. He shouldn't use the rose oil. The rose oil costs $1 zillion, and people would only smear it on the body if for refuah purposes. Then the Tanakhama holds, if you're a prince, so you use it regularly during the week, so you could use it on Shabbos as well. And then the Tana Reb Shimon says, we can't have some people are allowed to do it and other people can't do it. So it's all or nothing. And so Reb Shimon says that Klal Yisrael are all viewed as princes and they could all use it. Okay. Achoshish manav chulei. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda. Amar Rav. Halacha k'Reb Shimon. So Rav says halacha follows the Tana Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon, and it says, we know, Daf Yomi, people know that when we refer to Reb Shimon, meaning Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Remember? We discussed it. Okay, good. Do you remember we gave a Hesber? He's usually called throughout Shas Reb Shimon. And then in some instances he's called
before or after the cave.
Exactly right, Vern. You're doing very good with the Daf Yomi. and they said that like his statements after he left the cave are much more authoritative than the statements before. Because he studied for 13 years and was in the cave, so his learning got even better. Okay, and hopefully all your learning will get better as you continue on with Daf Yomi. You know, the effect of Daf Yomi, if you study Daf Yomi for one day, that helps. You do it, you know, 2 or 3 days, it helps. A week helps, a month helps, a year helps. But the key is, you know, over the course of time, you know, like Rav Lerner says, drip, drop by drop by drop. It adds up, adds up, adds up. And then after a number of years, you have a lot. Okay, let's take a look back on the Gemara. So the Gemara, so Amar Baba Rezavda, Amar Rav Halacha Reb Shimon. So Rav says, Halacha follows Reb Shimon, that people are allowed to use the rose oil on Shabbos for, you know, even as a, you know, for medical need. So he says, the main ra, because we can't have some people allowed to use it, some people not, so everybody could use it. So the Gemara says, the main ra, Reb Shimon Sfirlei. So it sounds like Rav holds, like the Tana Reb Shimon, by Hilchot Shabbos. This is a little trickier. Let me see if this works. Let me see if I got this here. One second. All right, give me one second. It didn't work. Okay, you know what happened? I had trouble with my computer before. That was the problem. All right, stop to share. Okay, there's different mafarshim to explain what does it mean that he holds like Reb Shimon. So the article says, where's the article? Yeah, the article says in footnote 38, he says, he quotes from the Ramban and the Ran, that the Gemara knew through tradition that if Rav agrees with the leniency of Reb Shimon, because he has a general policy of ruling leniently in matters concerning Shabbos. So if you look at the Rashi, let's look at the Rashi, three lines from the bottom. Lameimi de Rav, now there's two versions of Rashi. You see Bekule, or Nusach Acher Bekule. So they're both Bekule, they're both pronounced the same way. One's with a kuf and one's with a kaf, right? So who wants to explain the difference between the kuf and the kaf? This is the time to speak up. Anybody want to explain the difference? No? All right. Anyway, so let's get back in. So the Gemara says, let me read the Rav. The first version holds Bekulei Shabbat Sfir Lake Reb Shimon V'ha'amar Bekulei, that in the leniencies of Shabbos, he holds like Reb Shimon. Or the other version is Bekulei Shabbos, like he holds, by all the dinim of Shabbos, he holds like Reb Shimon. So they must have had some tradition that, you know, that he agrees with Reb Shimon, with the leniency. If he holds like Reb Shimon here, because of the leniency of Reb Shimon, he'll hold like all of his leniencies throughout Shabbos. That's what we think. So let's see back in the Gemara. So he says, "Amar Rav." So he says, "Lameimer the Rav Reb Shimon Sfir Lei, ba'ha'amar Rav Simi Bar Chia Mishmei the Rav, but Rav Simi Bar Chia said, 'Rav, Haim Misukraya Denaziata.' Turn page. Asur La'Duke Biyom Atava. That now this." Misukraya Denaziata is like a stopper for a faucet, for a spigot on a barrel. They would have a rag that they somehow would stick to prevent any leaking from it. So you're not allowed to put that rag in on Yantiv, and certainly not on Shabbos because of Schita, because you're going to end up squeezing the fluid from the rag. So now the Gemara assumes that this is working with the idea of Einu Mitkaven, that it might squeeze out or might not squeeze out. But remember that we have machloka between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon on this. Shimon says Davar Shein Mekaven is mutar, right? And Fern knows the Gemara, Gorer Adam Kimita Kisei B'Safsal, that a person is allowed to drag on Shabbos the bed, the mita, the chair, and the bench, and because it may make a charis, but may not make a charis, according to Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, absolutely not. So the Gemara says, here Rav holds like the stringent opinion. Here you're saying that all the leniencies he holds like Reb Shimon. Here he's holding like not like Reb Shimon. He's holding like Reb Yehuda. So the Gemara says the top line, "Bahi afilu Reb Shimon moda." In that case, even Reb Shimon would agree that you're not allowed to squeeze the rag into the spigot. He says, "Dabai v'Rabba da Amri Tarvayu," because Dabai v'Rabba both say, "Moda Reb Shimon Psik Reisha v'lo Yamod." The Reb Shimon agrees by Psik Reisha. You all know Psik Reisha. When something definitely will occur, like opening the refrigerator door with light going on, everybody agrees that it's, even Reb Shimon will agree that that's totally, that you're doing a malach on Shabbos. So Mela, that's not a stira to Rav's holding here. So again, Rav holds over here, he passes like Reb Shimon, and we think that he'll hold like all the leniencies of Reb Shimon by Shabbos. So the Gemara says, so that we answered. Ba'ama Rav Chiya Barashi, I'm a Rav. Rav Chiya Barashi said the name of Rav, Halacha K'Reb Yehuda. He says, V'Rav Chana Bar Ami Amar Shmuel Halacha K'Reb Shimon. He says that Rav said the Halacha follows Reb Yehuda. So again, talking about Davar Sheinu Mitkaven, here we have Mefurash, where Rav says the halacha follows Reb Yehuda, not Reb Shimon. In other words, separate and distinct from this incident with the rag on the spigot or whatever the faucet. In other words, Rav says mefurash, the halacha follows the Tana Reb Yehuda. The davar sheinu mitkaven is prohibited on Shabbos. And Rav Chanan bar Ami mamar shua lach Reb Shimon. And then Rav Chiya bar Avin matni lo below gabrei. Rav Chiya bar Avin learns the machloket without the intermediate chachamim, i.e., Rav Amar Alachet K'Reb Yehuda. Rav says Mefurish, Alachet is like Reb Yehuda. Ushmul Amar Alachet K'Reb Shimon. So how do we explain this now? So the Gemara assumed that Rav was saying Alachet is like Reb Shimon, and he's holding like Reb Shimon because this represents a leniency in Reb Shimon, and he holds by all the leniencies of Reb Shimon by Shabbos. But here we see that's not the case. He doesn't hold by all the leniencies of Reb Shimon by Hilchot Shabbat.
So do we have to hold all or nothing?
Well, that's why I did the Rashi. That was the Ramban and the Ran. They said they had a tradition that if he held like Reb Shimon, whose leniencies he holds by all the leniencies of Shabbos. So hold off with the question with that. Let me get to the end of the sugya, and then we'll try to address it. That's what the Gemara assumes. So the Gemara says on the eighth line, Elam Arava. Rather, Rava says Aniva Risha B'Chavura Targimna. I and the lion in the Chabura. It means like a very strong Talmud, Targimnam. So we explain this. Umanu, the Gemara interjects, who is the Arisha B'Chabura? Reb Chiya bar Avin. So that's who. So Rava and Reb Chiya bar Avin explain the Sugya. Halacha K'Reb Shimon V'la Mitaime. That when Rav said the Halacha follows Reb Shimon, he agreed with the conclusion that Halacha is like Reb Shimon, that a person could use the rose oil but not for based on Reb Shimon's Svara. Reb Shimon's Svara is I can't have something that, you know, a portion of the Jewish population could do it and another portion of the population can't do. So they agree that he could use it, but not for his reasoning. He says, my halacha k'Reb Shimon v'lami tami. So what does that mean? The halacha is like Reb Shimon, but not from based on his Svara. Ilei ma halacha k'Reb Shimon d'sharei. If it means that the halacha like Reb Shimon that it permits it, v'labi taimei, the other Reb Shimon savar masi, the Reb Shimon holds it's curative. In other words, that indeed taking vinegar will cure the person or help the person with the tooth pain. But he holds that he's allowed to do it because, and if you look in the Rashi on the fourth narrow line, the other Reb Shimon savar masi, v'afilu haki shari, dein l'chad mutar l'zeva asr l'zeh. He holds it helps. But we're not going to asr it on Shabbos because I can't say that B'nai Malachim get to use it and other people can't use it. He says, back in the Gemara, Rav Savar Lo Masi. Rav holds it's not curative. So that's why Rav permits it. It's a zero. It does nothing for you. So if something is not of any medicinal help, so then you could take it on Shabbos. It's not really a medicine if it doesn't do anything. And here again, we're talking about something that, you know, like is like a food item. I don't know if we would say that with a pill, frankly. All right, let's see. He says, Rav Savar Lomasi. Rav holds it's not curative. So the Gemara says, V'savar Rav Lomasi. Rav holds that vinegar is not curative. He says, V'hami dekatani b'nei malachim sakin al-gabi ma'koteyan, shemen vered, means even the Tanakama hold, it means both the Tanakama and Rav Shimon hold that it is curative. Because the Tanakama says that only B'nai Malachim can use it. Michal Damasi. So we don't think that Rav is going to take on both the Tanakama. He's not going to take on. The Tanakama and Rav Shimon both agree it is curative. Ella, halach, oh, just one minute. Ella, halacha Rav Shimon Deshari V'lami Taimei. He meant halacha follows Rav Shimon, but not based on his Svara. He says, the either Rav Shimon Savar, Afal Gavlo Shchiach Shari. Shimon holds that even though the oil is very valuable, and it's very uncommon, you know, to use it, you know, so then he holds, notwithstanding that, you could use it on Shabbos. He says, V'rav savar ishchiachin ilo shchiachlo. Rav holds, no. Rav, in essence, really holds like the Tanakama. If everyone is using it, then you could do it. So it means if in a locality, everybody would use the Shemen Beret. And we said Shemen Beri is very expensive, but the Gemara is going to say, V'achet Rav Shchich Mishka Dabarda. In Rav's locality, they had a lot of this rose oil. Apparently, it wasn't so expensive. Everybody used it. So Rav held, you could use the rose oil on Shabbos because it doesn't look like a refuah. Everybody uses it left and right. It's like, you know, it's like milk. You know, you buy milk in the store. It's not so expensive. So that's the rose oil. So that's all Rav was saying. So Rav, when Rav said the halacha is like Rav Shimon, Rav just meant to say that you in my locality, you could use the rose oil. But really, Rav agrees with the Tanakama in this halacha, not Rav Shimon. Let's see the Rashi on this, then we'll review and we'll take some questions, okay? So six lines, eight lines from the bottom. Apagav lo shchiach, shemen vered, b'mekomo shel zeh, even though it's uncommon, hasach b'menu, b'damav yikarim, it's very expensive, b'akol yodim shinosachu el refuah, shari. So according to Reb Shimon, even though it's like rare and expensive, you're allowed to use it on Shabbat. Because we consider all Klal Yisrael to be princes, so they're all allowed to use the oil on Shabbos. He says, Reb Yehuda Oser. Now Reb Yehuda's Oser, I assume that he's identifying the Tanakam Bar Mishnah with the Tana Reb Yehuda. In other words, like you have certain bar pluktas and shas, like they're disputants, they go together, like Rameir and Reb Yehuda. And here you have Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon. Anyway, so he says like Abai Varava. You know what I mean? Like everybody, like you have certain pairs, they're always arguing with one another, like Hillel and Shammai. Anyway, so he says Reb Yehuda Oser, the Tana Reb Yehuda is Oser back in Rashi, Demucha Milta, because it's obvious. Varav Nami Reb Yehuda Sfirle, Rav holds like Reb Yehuda. You can't use the rose oil on Shabbos because if you use the rose oil, it'll be apparent to everybody that you're taking refuah on Shabbos. Ella b'mekomo hu d'shari, but in his own locality, Rav permitted it. Why? D'shchiach d'sachin d'shem and vered. Everybody used it. It was everybody, healthy people, sick people, everybody used the shem and vered in Rav's locality. He says v'lomucha milta, so it wasn't obvious that you're using it for medicinal purposes. Therefore, he permitted it. So again, you know, I got to move on because we're getting late. But the basic idea that we spoke about is that we had a machloket between the Tanakama and Reb Shimon. whether a person is allowed to use Shemen Vered, the rose oil, on Shabbos. So the Tanna Kamma says most people can't use it because most people, it's very expensive. Most people would never use this for, you know, any other purpose other than medicinal purposes. So they can't use it on Shabbos. Unless you're Ben Melech, you're an aristocrat, you have $10 million, then you use it even for healthy things so you could use it on Shabbos, otherwise not. And the Tanna Rabbi Shimon says, listen, we're not going to have one rule for B'nai Melachim, one rule for everybody else. In my view, all Jews are B'nai Melachim, so everybody gets to use it. That's the way the Tanna Rabbi Shimon says. So Rab says, Halacha follows Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, but that sounds like he's following the leniency of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon has this leniency. And if that's the case, he should hold by all leniencies of Rabbi Shimon in Shabbos, and he doesn't hold by all leniencies. So the Gemara says, no, you misunderstood what he was saying. When he said Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, all he meant was, Rav really holds like the Tanna Kamma Rebbe Yehuda. And he was just saying in his own locality, Rav was in Surah. So in Surah, they had a lot of Shemen Vered. They had a lot of this rose oil, and it wasn't so expensive. And everybody used it for that, this, that, and the other. So he said, the halacha is like Reb Shimon, that you could use the rose oil. But he didn't mean it that way. He just meant that since it's not muchach, that you're using it for refuah purposes, you're allowed to use it. Okay, who's got questions, comments, and thoughts on anything I said? Okay, let's go in. You know, I feel badly. Let me see if I can get this while you wait. I wanted that picture book, and I had everything. What happened was my computer froze, and right before the shiur, let me just see if I can get this quickly. No, one second, not here. One second. No, I did the wrong thing. One second. Let me get this. Okay. All right. One minute. Are we in Hebrew or English? Okay, one second. No. All right, I'll try this once more. If it works, it works. Otherwise, not. All right, I don't have time. All right, let me go back. Okay. We're cooking with fire. We were cooking with fire. All right, let me go back. I'm sorry. I have to put it in again. Okay, anyway, let's go back. All right, let me go back. So, all right, now, Hadra Lach Shmona Shrasim. Yesh Kovat, everybody. Finished another parak in Masechet Shabbos. The Siyum Masechet is Kuftan Zion. What I think about Shabbos is we began it before the COVID virus, and looks like we'll be ending it, looks like, still with the COVID virus. Anyway, but we're only about 46 dapim away from the Siyum Hashas.
What's the next Masechta after this one?
Erevin. Okay. Now, Hadra Lach Shmona Shrasim. Now, you're not allowed to tie a knot on Shabbos, and the key is you can't make a Kesher Shel Kayama, a permanent knot. So, there's Machlok Rishon on what it means, a permanent knot. So, the Derech of Rashi is the length of time you intend the knot to be around for. So if I tend the knot to be around for a very long period of time, that's a permanent knot. Let me see where we get Rashi's sheet to here. I have a book here. So one second. He has it here. One second. Let me get this thing with the knots. Yeah. Okay, one second. Let me see. All right. Anyway, the basic idea... According to Rashi, the only significant is the duration. This is a truly permanent knot. It's forbidden under biblical law. Now, with truly permanent, let me see what he says here. One second. Yeah, so according to Rashi, if I intend the knot to be there like forever, that's a kesher shel kayama. If I intend the knot just to be, let's say, for a week or more, then that's asur on a drabbanan level. And if I intend it not to be like less than a week, that's permissible according to the way Rashi is going to learn. And then the Rif and the Rambam have a different hesber on this. The Rif, and I'm reading here, the Rif and the Rambam, they hold that in order to be a permanent knot, it has to meet two conditions. It has to be a masei uman, professional, and it has to be shel kayama. In other words, the knot itself has to be a professional knot, and it has to be somewhat permanent. I tell you what, let me do the Mishnah and the Gemara, and then we'll come back to this a little bit, and then maybe we'll discuss it more another night as well. Okay, so we're kufiyot alef and aleph. Ve'eluk sharim shechayvin aleihem. The following knots, you're chayev min haTorah for making these knots. Kesher gamalim, kesher sapanim. The camel's knot and the sailor's knot. Now, the camel's knot and the sailor's knot, it means like through the nose or the snout of the camel, they would stick a loop. We don't know this. The Gemara is going to explain this. They would stick a loop and tie the loop. It would be a strap, and the loop would be tied permanently. Like that's the way Rashi will learn. And then through the boat, the sailor's boat, you have a little. I had the pictures in the picture book, and that's what I was trying to get. With the boat, again, there's a circle around. And it's attached to the boat. And again, you have a permanent knot in there. Then to each one of those loops, let's say it's a camel. So I'll attach the leash to that loop. And then I'll attach the line with the anchor to the loop. Okay, but the loop is so the Gemara says, Keshra Gamalim Keshra Sapanim. Ushem Shu Chayav Al Kishuran, just like your Chayav in a Torah for making such a knot, Kachu Chayav Al HaTeiran. So you also chayev if you're matir, right? It was kosher or matir. So you tie the knot, you're chayev. You untie the knot, you're chayev. Rabbi Meir Omer, kul kesher sheyichol hatiro b'achat miyadav, ein chayev in alav. Rabbi Meir says, if I could undo the knot with one hand, I'm not chayev for undoing the knot. Because that means it's not really a kesher shel kayama. Okay, we'll discuss this shortly, okay? All right, let's see back in the Gemara. So now Rashi points out, and it's good to remember this, that where this was in the Mishkan with the knots and the whole bit. So Rashi mentioned
the Yiriyot.
Okay, just one second. Rashi mentioned, you have it. On the fourth line, Rashi says, Koshrei chute yiriyot hanif sakot. Sometimes, like, a thread would break in the curtain, and the people making the curtains, they permanently tied the thread. That's the permanent knot. And then for Matir, Rashi brings down about the Saide Chilazon. We had this earlier, the people who were, you know, capturing the Chilazon. The Chilazon was this aquatic creature that had the dye, you know, for the Tzchelet. So sometimes they had to be Matir, the Kishrei Rishato. In other words, the nets had segments to them. So sometimes they had to, like, you have segment A, B, and C, like a sukkah, you know, like you have like segments in the sukkah. So sometimes they would have to untie a segment and let it go. In other words, they don't need a big net. So that's where matir was from. Okay. So in other words, the being the matir is helping the situation because you need a smaller net. Okay. Let's see back in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, my kesher gamalim, my kesher sapanim. What does it mean? The camel driver's knot and the sailor's knot. Elam a kitra de kitre bizmama, the kitra de kitre is to read. If you'll assume it's the knot, not the one that I described, but like the leash for the camel, where I attach it to that ring, but sometimes I take that leash off. Or let's say it's the line, you know, to the boat, but sometimes I take that line off. So he says, Hai Kesher She'eno Shel Kayamahu. Ela kitra dizmama gufa. So the Gemara says the kesher is for that circle that's going in the nostril of the camel and the circle that's going in the boat. That's a kesher shel kayama. So Rashi will learn that it means it's a permanent knot. I don't intend to ever take it out. And the Rif and the Rambam will learn that the way the knot was made was also like a specific, like a craftsman's knot. And I intend to leave it there permanently. Okay? Let me just do a few more lines and we'll pause. We maybe won't pause too much. Rav Meir Omer, kol kesher v'chulei. Now, the Tan Rav Meir says that any kesher that a person could be matir with one hand is you're allowed to do on Shabbos. So, by Rav Achadvoy, Achoy Demar Acha. So, Rav Achadvoy, the brother of Rav Acha, asked, Anivel Rav Meir Mahu, what about a bow? What will Rav Meir say with a bow? So, he says, Tamid Rav Meir Mishum Diachola Hatiro Bachat Miyadav, who is the Rav Meir, I could just like let it go with one hand. Bahanami yachola hatiro, and this I could certainly, you know, undo with one hand, right? We all have bows, and you pull it, and it's gone. Odilma tamdur meir mishum zlomaharik. Maybe the reason Rameir says he's talking about that the knot was not tied securely, and that's why you could undo it. In other words, Rameir is talking about not pulling the bow, but undoing the knot because it's not tied securely. He says vahamaharik. But this bow, it is tied securely. So the Gemara leaves as a teku. It doesn't resolve that question here. So obviously we hold that you're allowed to, you know, pull to pull out from a bow on Shabbos. Let me finish the whole sugya, or let me take 1 minute for questions. Who's got questions, comments, and thoughts on anything we did so far? What's up, Fern?
Okay,
Fern,
what Rashi said before about the yiriyot, that if it became undone, then it would be permanently done. Why didn't they just permanently do it to begin with?
No. In other words, they were making the yiriyot. They have the yiriyot. Maybe they were done already with the yiriyot. And then the string breaks. So now they're not going to take all of the whole yiriyot apart. So they're just going to take the strings and tie it. And they tie it now, and now it's good.
All right.
What's up, Malka?
So my question is with braids. You know, braids.
Braids. You mean in the hair?
Yeah, the braids. So I learned, I mean, that you weren't allowed to braid your hair.
Right.
Because it was considered permanent, but it's not intended for permanence and doesn't last very long.
Well,
I mean, depending on your hair.
Okay, so now you're getting into the issue. So according to Rashi, if you intend it to last a week or more, that's prohibited on a Drabbanan level. Now, other Rishonim say if you intend it to last a day or more, that's already prohibited. So I assume that's what the thing we're going with braids. So, you know, when we get more time, let me see if I can get in the Shabbos home if he addresses it here. But I think you're right that you're not allowed to do the braiding on Shabbos. Let me see if he's got it here.
Didn't we have in the Gemara that you're not allowed to do?
Well, say again, what?
Didn't we have braiding in the Gemara that said it was usher?
I don't recall, but I'm not surprised if it is. Okay. All right. It could be. Now I know we had about a Kaddish Baruch Hu braiding Chava's hair, but I don't remember. The Gemara said you can't do that on Shabbos. Okay. The Gemara said right. They said the Krachayam, they called the braiding Benita, like a building. But
oh, right. Okay.
But I have to move on, and then Blinetta will try to.
How long does it not have to be tied to be regarded as permanent?
I just said again, this machloket rishonim, but some shitot hold if you intend it to last more than 24 hours, then you're already violating the din d'rabbanan. So, I need more hesber, but I don't have so much time right now. So just wait a few minutes, and I'll cut there. Okay, now let's see further in the Gemara. So manitin, the Mishnah says yeshlachak sharim she'ein chayvim leim kekesher gamalim kesher sapanim. Now we learned already. The camel driver's knot and the sailor's knot, that's, you violate the Torah, the Shabbos on Torah level if you make those knots, or you undo the knots. Now, the Mishnah says there are other knots that are not in the same category as that. Now, the Gemara is going to explain that we don't know this yet, that the next thing I would expect are things that are rabbinically prohibited. But instead, the Mishnah segues right away to those things that are permissible. He says, Kosher Isha Miftach Chaluka, a woman is allowed to tie like her blouse. And Rashi describes it that the blouse would have like two flaps. Like you would tie like the flap on the right shoulder to the left shoulder and the left flap on the right shoulder. He says the Galachim in his time dressed that way. I'm not sure how they dressed, but I wanted to, the picture book would have helped here, but I just don't have time. He says, but the idea is that the chaluk, you know, the way Rashi learns, she puts it on and takes it off. So that's that you're allowed to do. So he says, b'chutei svacha, a woman is allowed to tie the strings on her hat. He says, v'shel piskia, like a girdle, uritsuot minal b'sandal, the straps on a shoe or a sandal, v'notot yayin v'shemen, like the container, the leather container for wine and oil, ukedera shel basar, you have a pot of meat, and they would have cloth, and if you don't have a lid, so they would tie the cloth to the top of the pot. Reblesim Yaakov mir, that you could tie rope in front of like a stall so the animal doesn't walk out on Shabbos. Okay, so the Gemara says, Hagufa Kasha, the Mishnah seems internally contradictory. First of First, the Mishnah says there are knots that you're not chayiv, like the camel knot and the sailor knot. He says, which implies that you're not chayiv, we won't execute you for it, but you still violate Shabbos on a rabbinic level if you make them. And then the Mishnah right away goes to things that you're permissible to make the knots on. So the Gemara says, Hachi Kamar, this is what the Mishnah, the way we should understand the Mishnah. It's as if there are words missing in the Mishnah. There are some knots that you're not chayiv for on Shabbos, but still prohibited rabbinically. And then turn page, the top line on Kufi Bezim and Aleph. Kitra de Katri Bizmama, but Kitra de Katri Bizthrida. It means like you have the leash that you're tying to the camel. In other words, the camel has the nose ring, and that's a Malacha Daraisa. Then you have the leash that you're tying to that ring. And here's the important Rashi. If you look at the top line of Rashi, Rashi says at nearly the end of the line, the Beis Yosef focuses on this. Rashi says sometimes you leave that leash attached for a week or two. So the Beis Yosef takes it from here that Rashi would hold that if it's a knot that's going to last around for a week, that you would be prohibited on a Rabbanan level, a rabbinic level. He says, and then the Archbishop had this as well. He says, and the same thing with Kitra de Bistradila, like with the boat. He says, then Vayeshim Utarm Lechachila, then some things you have a green light to do, Umayuniu Kosher Miftechei Chaluka. A woman can tie her blouse or whatever. Okay, let me just do a few lines with this, then I got to call it a night. So I'll read a little bit. This is from the Shabbos home by Rav Simcha Bunim Cohn. All right, here you got it. So he says, now he says here, according to one view, which is the Rif and the Rambam, only a knot which meets two conditions is forbidden under biblical law. The conditions are the knot must be professional, masei uman, in other words, like it's like a professional knot, you know. He says, and two, permanent, shel kayama. A knot that meets only one of the conditions is forbidden midrabanan. So if it's only one condition, it's prohibited on the rabbanan level. A knot meeting neither of those conditions can be tied on Shabbos. Okay, that's the Rif and the Rambam. Then, according to the other view, which is Rashi and the Rush, the only significant factor is the duration in which the knot was tied. A truly permanent knot, one that is meant to be remain knotted indefinitely, is forbidden under biblical law. A knot that is somewhat permanent, one that is meant to be knotted for more than one day, but not indefinitely. So he says one day here. So even though I showed you in the Rashi 7 days, but there's another sheath that holds one day, I'm talking about it, it's forbidden by rabbinical decree. And a temporary knot, one that's meant to be untied within 24 hours, is permitted. Some say that any knot that's intended to be open within 7 days is considered temporary. Okay, now, a practical difference between these opinions is whether one is permitted to tie a professional knot with intent to open it within 24 hours. Let's say I have a fancy knot, but I intend to undo it within 24 hours. According to the first opinion, this is forbidden rabbinically. According to the Rif and the Rambam, I have the fancy knot. It's like the Kesher Shul, what does he call it? He says the... He says Masei Uman, in other words, like the Kesher of Umanim, of craftsmen. Whereas according to the second opinion, according to Rashi, I intend to knot it shortly. I'm allowed to do it. He says another practical difference is whether it's permitted to make a non-professional knot that will remain in place for more than one day, but not indefinitely. According to the first opinion, this type of knot is permitted. So according to the first opinion, I have a non-professional knot that'll be around for more than one day, but less than 7 days. So that's permissible. He says, whereas according to the Rashi, that's forbidden rabbinically. Now, I'll mention some halakot with this. You know, one thing that comes up the post can bring down, you know, with the Sefer Torah, there's a gardel, you know, like a tie on a Sefer Torah. So the fancy gardels have like Velcro, and now they have clips. But the old gardels, you have like a sort of like not a rope, but like fabric, and then you make a bow on it. So the post can bring down, let's say it's Shabbos Mincha, and I'm leaning from a Sefer Torah. The poskim say I should not make that bow on the Sefer Torah because I am not going to undo that bow within 24 hours, right? At the earliest, the next Kriyas Torah day would be Monday. So the poskim say don't make the bow. So you just like tuck it in. In other words, you can't. It works a lot better with the ones that have a clip or Velcro. Then you don't have a problem with that.
Rameh would say that's allowed.
Say again what?
Rameh would say that bow is allowed.
One second, Remeyer. One second. One second.
You could open that with one hand.
Yeah. So, one second. Yeah, Remeir. Remeir would say that that's allowed. One second. Yeah. So Remeir would say that's allowed. Okay, but I'm doing halakha lemaisa with this. Okay. Now the other places where you have, the key with Daf Yomi is it sensitizes you to issues. Like before, I don't care, I just do. Now you start thinking, putting all actions of the day through a filter. So making like a tie, if I have a tie around my neck, so that I intend, it's not Masei Uman, that's what we say, and I intend to undo it, very quickly. So that's permissible. Now, if I tie my shoelace with a bow, that's permissible. Now, I'll talk about let's say you double knot your shoelaces. So, So I want to speak to Rav Schechter directly about it, but I heard he says, I think that if the shoelaces keep coming out, unless it's double knotted, you're allowed to do it. That, I believe so. But I want to speak to him again about that. Okay, I think that's it for tonight.
But whether or not the shoelaces come out does not speak to whether you can undo it with one hand.
No. Skip Remeir. I don't think it's halacha like Remeir. So don't listen to leave Remeir out of this discussion.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it's not. I don't think that's halacha lemaisa with the one hand. All right. Now, okay. Any questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did so far?
Well, okay. You brought up the thing about tying the Torah. Let's say that you have Hagba and on Shabbos morning,
right?
And you're using Sefer Torah number one,
right?
So the only thing you have 10 Sefer Torahs in the right. Torah. Right, you may not use the same one for Mincha.
Well, that's a good question. It's a Ha'ara. Maybe you want to be Machmir, but you have a theoretical possibility that you would use that Torah. So maybe, but if you're telling me, I know for 100% sure I'm not going to use that Torah, then in a Chinami, maybe you shouldn't tie that on Shabbos morning. All right. Now, I'm going to call it a day with this. Everybody good? Okay, everybody unmute. Let me end the recording. Okay, record.